celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis.
Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have a fellow Jersey girl. We have Kate Assaraf. She is the boundary pushing founder and CEO of Dip. This is an award-winning waterless beauty brand making big waves with small bars. And Dip, I love when I read this, Kate, it's an environmental awareness company that happens to double up as an incredibly good hair company. And her business is driven with morals, ethics, all this good stuff that we hope to see in leadership. And she's battling the beauty industry's plastic problem, aiming to redefine what it means to be sustainable enough. Kate brings bold honesty, creative grit, and positivity into every realm of her life. And doing research for her was so fun because she's been featured in Allure, Cosmopolitan magazine, and so many more, all the way to being named as a Forbes Next 1000 entrepreneur. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. She is an advocate, a business founder, CEO, a mum, athlete, and a leader in this eco-conscious beauty lifestyle industry. And today we're going to dive into her purpose behind Dip, disrupting an industry, which is so fun and radical, and why purpose-driven beauty is her passion, or one of her many passions. But Kate, it is such a pleasure to welcome you today to Tall Poppy Talk. My first question is, where and how are you today?
So where, I'm going to get metaphorical on you. I'm on cloud nine right now because we are, my mission with Dip is beyond shampoo and conditioner. I really want people to learn how to find their local refill stores and refill household items. And I've partnered with one of my favorite bands since I was in high school, like the band I used to hang out with my friend, and like we'd all be looking at the ceiling and playing their music. The band is called Guster, and we're doing a collab together. And the mission behind the collab is to get people at their concerts to be aware of their local refilleries so that they can know. So concert goers can know they're already refilling their water bottles through this company called Reverb at the concerts. And now they're like, they can know that beyond the concert, they can go refill in their community, and is like the most exciting thing ever. And it's starting like tomorrow.
That's perfect, because this will come out next week. So it would have been, the collab would have been happening for a few days or a week even.
Perfect.
Get you in this moment is really exciting. So I'm hyped for you that's happening.
Thank you. It's one of these like out of body experiences to be listening to an artist for, you know, maybe like 30 years, just short of 30 years. And now we're going to be side by side promoting this new level of sustainability. And it's honestly like it's a dream come true. And it's a pinch me moment. And you're catching me like right as it's happening. Like I'm at the top of the roller coaster right now. And it feels so good.
And part of that too, I can imagine like the artists that I really love, you want to think that they're into the same values you have. You want to think they're eco-driven, but you're into the music. So then not only for them to collab with you, which is one thing, but what you stand for and what Dip stands for makes you want to play their music even louder, because you're like, oh, these people are aligned with me.
Yeah, it's been nothing but Guster in my house for the past, 2 months as we've been working on this collab together. And what is like so cool is that Adam Gardner he's one of the singers. He really walks the walk. Like he goes to his local refill store. He refills his pantry items. He refills his wife actually refill. And so it is so cool to see someone who's genuine in the eco space, because there's a lot of bad actors in the eco space, like everywhere.
Yeah, there's also a lot of people wanting to do stuff, and as consumers, especially in the US, there's a lot of stuff that in consumer products doesn't have to be declared, or as opposed to FDA with your food or your drugs, you know what's in there, but with your consumer products, there's not as rigorous standards. So you are competing with a lot of, you don't want to think it's malicious, but a lot of false or maybe inflated eco.
Yeah.
Whereas Dip is, as you said, walking the walk.
Yeah. And it's also kind of like when you're going to get a job and you have an honest resume and everyone around you is like lying on their resumes and you're all going for the same people. It's a weird world we live in where people can fake anything, and that includes brands and businesses.
Yeah. And I guess, well, the first question I have for you is, and it's interesting that you're talking about the collab here, because when you think founder, like, that's such a broad word, and CEO, maybe if you're in this space, you understand more, but I really like to ask people who have a job similar to yours, where you're like, oh, what do they actually do? What do people think you do? And then what do you actually do as a CEO and founder of Dip?
So it's because I have a small company and a small brand. I think actually the perception is that I am doing everything. You know, like, it's, people now assume, like, everyone calls themselves CEO. It's that same resume thing, right? Like, everyone's like, I'm CEO of this small company. And it started that way. But now I think people assume that I'm the engine behind everything. And right now I have grown my team. We have nine people on the Dip team, and I am nothing without my team now, you know? And so what I actually do is I come up with, like, a lot of the humor behind the brand, and a lot of the legwork was done in the first 18 months of me, you know, creating a website and coming up with, like, the silly stuff. But now we're, like, in this other league where things are, you know, I have my own factory now. I have my own American factory in North Carolina and my own team there. And they're, like, wonderful. So I have my own, I've pulled two people from the refill community to join the Dip team. And they both had really successful refill stores, but they believed in, like, what we were doing so much that they came to join the team. And so I have, my day-to-day is mostly interacting with my team and talking about how we can make sustainability cool again. Like, I think sustainability had its time in the sun, and then people got fatigued out, you know, disenchanted with it. And so as a team, we're always like, how do we revive it? Like, how do we make it so that people are excited about being plastic free instead of, like, jaded, or instead of, like, meeting us with eye rolls? And I mean us, like the sustainable community. And so that's a lot of what we do, is obviously there's work, but then there's the chatting about, like, making sustainability cool again.
You're onto it. Like, it is becoming cool. And hearing you talk about it, it's exciting. Like I'd said, I'm lucky enough to be sent some product, and I'm itching for it when my boyfriend brings it over. I'm like, please, because the packaging that is there is fun. And it's not like this, and there's no shade if there is, but, like, it's not a kind of clinical, like, oh, this is hair care. Because like you said, there's been a bit of a step of, okay, maybe sustainability had its moment. I love how you said that. But now people are like, oh, well, is it effective? Is it this?
Yeah.
Dip. And I would love to hear about how long it took you to kind of get and make these products. Like, how did you pull together all the values you had about, like, efficacy and the eco and the cool, all of that?
So the baseline I came up with for myself was, like, I want these products, these shampoo and conditioner bars, to be so good that I don't even have to mention the plastic-free part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that was the goal. And so even if you look at our marketing, we're barely ever talking about plastic, ever. Like, except for plastic-free July, because that's kind of a fun party we hold online. But outside of that, like, we're not, we want you to take, like, it's, take a look at Dip and realize it's very serious hair care for not so serious people. And a lot of that is, like, rooted in being from New Jersey, because the people I know don't want to be finger waggled at to, like, reduce their plastic. They want to just find something that is great. And so I thought first from that baseline, like, I want to market to people like me who just want to have a good time and shop for things that make them feel good, not things that feel like an obligation to the earth. So that's how we as a company reframed sustainability for us. And then we wanted to make it fun and silly and very 90s. And then, you know, as far as making it, like, effective, there's this pattern in the beauty industry where something is successful. You take that as a benchmark, you bring it to a chemist and you say, make this. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot of the bars out there, you see, like, a lot of lip glosses out there. They're all kind of the same and they all kind of churn out at the same time. What I did instead was I found the best hair chemist I could find, who had done a lot of really professional lines, hair care lines for that you would see in the back bar at a salon. And I was like, I want you, who's never made a bar, to design a bar for me.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do. I wanted to be, you know, great for all hair types. And I want it to be the conditioner, especially to be able to detangle your hair when you come out of the pool or the ocean. Like, those are my things. And so after 40 iterations, like, Dip was born and I was comfortable going to market with what we had. And I love it.
That's so cool. Like, and I know I keep saying that word, so I'll think of a different one. But as well, before we started recording, we talked about being Jersey girls, because I am one. I just don't sound like one. But there is something, and I'll explain to people, because when I was moving to the States, it was Jersey. It was either Jersey Shore was the only interpretation, or thankfully my dad was like, Sopranos. And then that was the two things we were dealing with. And then since moving, I'm like, no, New Jersey has a huge beach culture, like surf, the swimming, life-saving, and the mountains, and obviously cities, etc. So how much of you, and you've touched upon it there, but comes from being a New Jersey gal? Like, how do you feel like that affects?
I'd say like 99% of it. Like, the sense of humor of the brand is absolutely New Jersey. And I've lived all over the place. So I've lived in LA, Savannah, New York, I've lived in London, and I've lived in Paris. I've lived in all those places. And every time when I find a New Jersey person, I'm like, I'm off to a flame. I'm like, oh, thank God. Because we just, it's a different sense of humor and it's a different kind of sarcasm. And I've noticed like some other places, like New York is similar, and Michigan is actually very similar in their sense of humor. But there's something about New Jersey that feels so much like home in the personality. And I know, like, you know, I've noticed in marketing, they always try and tell you in marketing to create marketing messages for like fifth graders. And I find that very insulting, because everyone I know in New Jersey is like witty and smart and deserves to be spoken to like an adult. Yeah. Like, if you're marketing it to adults, I think it's really, really insulting to market to people like they're 10.
Yeah.
Do you know? And so a lot of that is kind of like the rebellious New Jersey girl in me that's like, no, I'm going to talk to people like the way they want to be talked to. I want it to be ridiculous, and I want it to be very upfront and straightforward. And so I would say like 99, I would almost, it's even closer to 100% is influenced of that.
That I resonate a lot. And that's something I have become, like a moth to flame, as you say. Excites me, because there is, and that's the personality you have, and it comes through with Dip. It is personality. It's not overly curated in the best way, right? Like, this is a product that you made because you felt passionate about it, and now your team. And then leads me to my second question, because I am always really interested when there is someone who spearheads and pioneers and found something that when their team grows, one, I can imagine an exciting challenge is getting people on the team who care as much as you do, but identity. And I had mentioned that this Tall Poppy Talk initially began a lot with athletes who do grapple with the identity conversation. Or when I finish competing, who am I if I'm not a competitive athlete? But that happens with business and being a mom or whatever else. So a big question, but could you just talk me through this evolution you've had and the identity as an entrepreneur CEO?
Sure. So I don't know how to say this I think a lot of people would identify with this, but in my personality, I don't feel like a grown up yet, even though I'm 42. And so it feels like, you know, you've heard the Talking Head song where he's like, how did I get here? Like, it's not like, and I'm like, I do feel that I am cosplaying as a CEO, if that makes sense. So my identity is still like the person I was when I was in my early 20s and hanging out with my friends. I still feel like that person without kids, but now I have two sons and I have a home and a business and a factory and all this. So it almost feels like I've compartmentalized that identity, like the CEO person, and I save it for like conversations like this. But when I'm walking like day to day, I don't feel like I have this whole company and all of these things around me. It's a very weird thing. And I don't know whether anyone else feels it. Has anyone else described it to you that way?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think people have described it exactly like you say. It's compartmentalizing the CEO part, but the word compartmentalize happens a lot where people feel like they have to, it's easier to code switch. Like, okay,
yeah,
and this, and then you almost feel, do you remember when you were little and you'd go to the supermarket and you'd see a teacher and you were like, wait, why are you out of school?
Like, yeah.
Why do you live outside of school? And people have such, I feel there are times where you have the, you know, the CEO like then mixes with your beach friend and you're like, whoa, this is not supposed to be happening at the same time. Like, I'm trying to compartmentalize this. And yeah, people grapple with, and maybe that challenge of, oh, these things all merge and it's actually the same person. I'm just switching. But it gets weird when they merge together.
Yeah, it feels weird. It's because, you know, some people do start a business for the ego. And that's like not really like, I prefer no one knows who I am, if that makes sense. Like, I can like hide a little bit, but it doesn't do a service to our customers or the company or my employees if I'm always hiding. So I try and come out of my shell and do these podcasts because I do think this is a very, you and I, like, we're talking to each other and I forget that I'm a CEO also, you know, and I think that that's really nice. And, but it is like a weird thing where I'm just like, who the hell let me run a company? You know, like, because there's so much you have to learn, and you kind of learn by, you know, it's a sink or swim thing. Like, I've learned like accounting and bookkeeping and tax law and all this stuff by accident. And it's weird that it even exists in my brain now.
Because I have to. Like,
you have to.
The unromantic part of business. Mm-hmm. Like, and I do some like, I do some contracting stuff. And doing the tax talks, and it's like, yes, it's fun and it's got all the, like you said, the 90s feel, and you want to be leaning into that, but there are also times when you do have to really knuckle down and be like, all right, what are our, like, you know, what are our taxes, what are our deductibles? And through forced learning, because you need to, you learn about those things.
Totally. It's Yeah. And then once they're in your brain, you forget that you've just like snowballed all of this knowledge in your brain. And I guess that's valuable.
Yeah.
Feels like body.
It's super, it's like very functional, very practical education. Yeah. Even with podcasts, there are different broadcasting, because it's not technically broadcasting, but it's in that realm. And there's a lot looser regulations on a podcast than like a live broadcast. But there are still rules that it's kind of a little bit like getting into podcasting, super low barrier to entry, honestly. Like, you can start putting it out, same with YouTube, but you're still needing to like adhere to some rules, and it's fun learning those. Touch wood, I don't do anything wrong, but sometimes someone will say something and I'll be like, I don't know if that can actually be out and about, because you want to fact check and make sure it's accurate. So I can imagine for you and your growing team and getting the factory down in North Carolina, even different states and what that means and stuff.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a big web to untangle, and so I don't know, but it is cool. And then I have to give myself credit, because I'm like, oh, I know how to do this. I can handle this stuff. And I couldn't do it 5 years ago before I knew. And so that is probably the coolest, weirdest part of the identity, because when I'm with my friends, we never talk about work ever. I've had some of the same friends since kindergarten. I've had some of the same friends from high school, like throughout my entire life, and I still don't know what they do. And I think it's really funny.
The trend, right? It's like, what does your best friend do for work? And you're like, oh, an office.
I have a friend who actually, like, he's a surgeon, an oncologist, and he uses a robot to cure bladder cancer in patients. And I'm like, that is crazy.
But,
you know, like, that is like, but he's my friend, my buddy that we just like joke around with all the time. So it's like really funny to just have these, I think a lot of people don't talk about work with their friends, and we just have this, everyone's a mystery.
Yeah.
8 hours of
And then doing something, yeah, like this podcast, it might be friends listening who are like, oh, I didn't know Kate knew about that. Because she, yeah, she does. And we talked about it a little bit, but I want to just make sure we don't miss out of this team of 9, did you say?
Yeah.
How has it been, even though you don't necessarily always have that identity as the boss, I'm going to use that word, but having a team where it expands and their success is your success and vice versa, and you want to do the best for them, and just, yeah, how have you kept your core values kind of going as the team expands, and making sure while you take all that on, you stay true to why you started Dip in the first place?
Yeah. So how do I keep the values with the team growing?
Yeah.
I have the best team. Honestly, like, I don't know whether there's some kind of divine intervention there that brought these people to me, or whether it was just a really, like, I've just been incredibly lucky that this specific group of people believes in the mission and is, and works towards it. And like, I don't know. I feel very, very lucky. Like, I feel like, you know, I keep rolling the dice and it keeps coming up in my favor. And so I that is something that I just don't take for granted. And I try and keep my employees really happy and know that they're so appreciated, because I honestly couldn't do anything. Like, I couldn't even be on a podcast before them, because I had to do everything, like everywhere, every hat. And now, you know, it takes a little bit of like letting go, but I've let it go to people that are so capable and so cool and fun. And that is like, you know, it's honestly the best thing that's ever happened to me.
The letting go part, I just want to jump on too, because that is, and you hear people say that of when you have done everything, and I've had this with guests, and it's trusting. And there's so I said I live in Amsterdam, it's very close to Germany, and there's a phrase in German where it's like, trust is nice, but control is better.
Yeah.
You want to trust, but you want to have control. And in this, it sounds like it's that flip where you're like, no, I trust them. And still, though, you have to let go and be like, this is my baby, but they care about it too. And in fact, it's going to grow and be even better.
Yeah.
So I'm letting it go.
And I would think that the Venn diagram, when someone first starts the job, right, like there, it's the two circles are like overlapped, and then they kind of pull apart eventually. So there's very little, you know, where we need to check and overcheck. So it doesn't start with trust, but it gets to trust as soon as someone's really knows how to do what they're doing. And what's cool about thinking of it that way is you don't want to expect your employee to be perfect right off the bat and know everything right off the bat. And I know a lot of people expect that from human beings that are new to a job. And it's so unfair. It's like you set your employee up for failure if you expect so much from them before they really get a chance to learn. And so what I've been really happy with just our way of hiring is that we do overlap a lot in the beginning, and then it just kind of like they're allowed to go and fly. And that's nice.
It's cool too what you said, and it made me think of a conversation with a friend recently, because about having mistakes and letting that be okay. And I was speaking with a friend, and I'm a few years older than some who have started in corporate, this is particularly marketing, and a friend called me and was like, I messed up. And I was like, oh girl, like I've been there, like talk to me.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, it's the thing's been done, like the mistake made. It's always about how you react and how you communicate with your boss or your team or whoever's involved and deal with that. And that's going to be the more memorable thing in the learning. But
totally.
Making that mistake, like it's going to happen. Unfortunate, yeah. Not even unfortunate, but
that's okay.
Yeah, it was a really cool moment where I felt like, oh, I had this experience and they called me and bonded and just was, you know, reaffirmed that, oh, yeah, it means you've hit that point, that check mark in your career has begun where you start to make mistakes.
Yeah, you have to make mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes, so I don't expect anyone else to be mistake free.
Yeah.
You know, the mistakes happen, and thank God I'm not, you know, curing people's cancer. Like my mistakes don't do it. Like my mistake would be a shampoo and conditioner emergency. Like My mistakes are I'm able to frame them in the grand scheme of things very easily because of the types of products I make. But hopefully there's no mistakes that upset my customers. Like that's my biggest fear is doing something that upsets my customers,
Has what was it like when you first started getting customer feedback or maybe repeat buyers or people who love the product as not as much, if not maybe more than you?
So it's an unbelievable feeling when a stranger buys your product more than once. It just is. And it's a feeling I'm now lucky enough to feel all the time, and I never get used to it. I never take it for granted. But in the beginning, so our bars, like the conditioner bar, can last a lot of people about a year. So it takes a long time for that customer to come back if they purchase a conditioner bar. And the shampoo bar, probably like 2 to 6 months. It depends on how often. And so it takes a long time to get my customers back. But our last time I looked, our retention rate was in the 70%. So and that's very high. And another thing to consider is we spend a lot of our marketing telling people to shop locally in their store. So they might buy their first bars from us and then leave the D2C part of it and go support their local stores. And so I think the retention is even higher, which is like I'm doing exactly what I set out to do, which was to make shampoo and conditioner bars that people love, that they buy over and over, regardless of whether they care about plastic or not. Like that's not the whole point.
Yeah, it's just good because I mean I am so excited for it because you can't see my hair's tied up, but my hair's like down my back and then
Oh my gosh.
thank you. But it's slicked back now. But honestly, it's always the thing of I'll be using shampoo bottles and conditioner and then they never finish at the same time, which is like what it but you feel so wasteful because
Yeah.
also you never get everything out of the bottle. I'm always like trying to get water in there, swirling it around,
Yeah.
trying to get more out.
Yeah.
The
Especially
spa.
with long hair.
Yeah.
Long hair, because my hair is pretty long. It's not the longest it's ever been, but it's pretty long. And I had to, I used to use so much conditioner, like full globs in my hand of conditioner. And so, I wanted the conditioner bar to last people a really long time because I felt like the conditioner, especially in my own personal use, was just going through like that. And so that's why the bar is so big and lasts so long.
Yeah, and you can see what's there because
Yeah.
it's a visual, and it's the same with like bar soap, even just like regular hand soap. It's
Yeah.
different and it smells nice. And actually, is yours fragrance free? Like, what's the
I
smell?
have both. So we have both. So I discovered that people just want to control what they smell like. So I watched people buy shampoo and conditioner for like 6 months in all different ways. Like in the salon, I watched them in CVS, I watched them in, Ulta, Sephora. I watched. And what everyone does that's the same is they take the bottle off the shelf, they unscrew the top, they smell it, and then they read it. So I was like, oh my gosh, like the smell, and I did it too. I did the experiment with the cell. Like the smell is the number one thing people care about beyond it does. And so we have a core line and we have seven different scents and then unscented. We have everything exists in unscented because it's like really important for l lots of different reasons. People want fragrance free, but for most part, and it for the most part, 12% of our customers are fragrance free. The rest all want scent.
Well, and the fragrance is really important too if people have like eczema, pruritus, or like any of those things that get inflamed, right, by fragrance.
Yeah.
So that's
Yeah, there's a lot of people with skin conditions that use DIP, and there's a lot of functional medicine doctors that recommend DIP for a lot of their patients that don't want any fragrance or anything extra. And so that's like really, really amazing.
That's and 12%. Like the fact that you have these numbers, is that because of sales where you're like, okay, 12% of sales is fragrance free? Cool.
Yeah. So of all the bars, like it's only 12% of people, like or 12% of the customers want fragrance free. So that's like a pretty interesting thing because I'm imagining that that's going to change over time. Even though our fragrances are considered very clean and at the highest standard for synthetic fragrance, it's interesting to see how that kind of community is changing and expanding the fragrance free, demands. And I think a lot of that has to do with people are very worried about fragrance as an ingredient. And I'm not, it depends on who makes the fragrance and at what standards it's made to. Ours are made to Credo's beauty standards. So like it really is free of phthalates, free of, you know, any kind of extra like animal products or, you know, they're really high end. It's like it's crazy. But you know, I'm excited to see these sensibilities change, right? I'm excited to see people see the word fragrance and question it instead of just, you know, blindly putting whatever on their body. I think it's really, I think this we're in this change transition time, and I think it's very cool.
Yeah, me too. The genesis of Tall Poppy, I'm switching gears sort of, but I started the podcast because I was really interested, two parts. One, I'd finished rowing because I went to Rutgers on a ship, and I finished and I was like, what do I talk to people about? I've spent the last 3.5, 4 years talking rowing all the time, and no one else really cares as much as you did. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then the second part was, I had always, you know, I think this is a universal feeling, not if you're just from New Zealand, where when you try and put yourself out there and want to rise above, you know, the poppy field analogy or metaphor, there's a feeling of getting cut down, or like maybe someone else might cut you down. And so those were these two reasons where I was like, well, why don't I talk to people who are certified tall poppies, who are in whatever field they're in, and just ask them. And it's been really fascinating, Kate, where some people are like, oh, we need it. Like, it builds resilience, it makes me sure of myself. Others, terrible. And so there's no right or wrong answer, but I just wanted to ask you if you could describe maybe how you've dealt with this concept of tall poppy syndrome, which is like, are you familiar with it? Like, how, okay, cool. What, yeah, what's your take on it, and how have you experienced it?
So I have been very, very lucky. I would say lucky. There's of course, lots of misfortune in my life, but I've been very lucky to have been raised by, I had my mother and my stepmother were both so, they were their tall poppies in their own way, each one of them. My mom was from England, but she was, I don't have either of them anymore. They both passed away. But my mom was, she was so strikingly beautiful. She was adventurous. She spoke 8 languages fluently. She grew up in England and then moved to Iran. She fell in love with my dad, moved to Iran, and at like 22, 23 years old, learned Farsi so well that she could teach French and German at the university level in Iran. Like, she was amazing. And then she came to the United States and she got her PhD in anthropology and taught at a university level anthropology here at Rutgers, actually. And then she was a world-class knitter, and so she would go to knitting conventions, and then she would do and then, you know, she spoke 8 languages fluently, but not just fluently, but like she was funny in 8 languages. Then she decided to teach middle schoolers languages and get them like excited about it. And that was like her happiest time. And so she was never wealthy, but she was so rich, if that makes sense. And she was a tall poppy. Everywhere she went, and she would like light up a room, and she was just hilarious and fun. And like I just admired her in a million ways for that. And then I had my stepmother was also a tall poppy. She was Iranian. She moved to the United States with 2 little kids, 2 daughters, and you know, she started her own business, a small furniture business that ended up being a very big furniture business in Long Island. And then she her two my two stepsisters, they are now, one is Harvard and the other one is Penn educated, like, and they built went on to be super successful in their fields. And I feel like a short poppy in the field with them, but I feel that I was so fortunate to find to have these two people who found success in two totally different ways, and women especially, and that, you know, in a different time, in a different world. And they've motivated me to live my life where I'm kind to others and good things come to me. And when I say like my first week in business, Dip sold $30,000 worth of product in the first week just from my own network of friends and, people I had worked with or known in different cities. And that to me is like one of the most validating things, because you can start a business and no one cares, or you can be someone who has put a lot of energy out in to other people, and that comes back to you in the most beautiful way, like in the most beautiful existence, like on the planet. And I feel very lucky to have that.
Wow. And both those women sound so incredible, like genuinely goosebumps, in the fact that those are your role models, and to be able to share and talk about them now in this moment and celebrate them, just shout out.
It feels so nice to talk about them without the tears come, you know, because you have lost them. But I'm so energized when I talk about them, because that's kind of how you keep the most inspiring people you know alive.
Yeah, you live for and with them and all that you do. And so now you being able to mention their lives and their impact and what they've done, and how now I'm going to go away and also have a little piece of them go through and what I do. I just think that's beautiful. So thank you for sharing. And obviously, so sorry for your loss with both of them. And now, though, for you to be living fuller and richer, I love that you said, there's a difference between wealthy and rich, because your mom just sounds like she was rich with so much in her life.
Yeah, she was never wealthy ever. And that's almost like the reason I don't think of wealth as a measure of success.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel very rich in a sense of like, my employees are amazing. The company feels good. Like, I spring out of bed to run my company every day. It's not something that I'm like, what's going on with Dip today? It's like, oh my God, like, what exciting thing is happening with Dip? Like, what are we going to tackle next? And that kind of energy that comes from just you're hearing me now, but I feel that energy coming from my employees also. And it makes it such a nice place to work. It's really what it comes down to.
Is there any comparison? I mean, Dip is so, like, that lane you carved, it is now becoming slightly more popular. So do you have that feeling ever of comparing to other companies and brands?
So what I do is I block all my competitors so I don't have to see any of their stuff. And it's not really a question of them seeing our stuff, because I don't really care. Yeah. They don't influence me. Do you know what I mean? Yes. I think that's part of being a tall poppy, right? It's like, you're like, okay, I'm going to put a blinder on to what everyone else is doing, because it will upset me, or it will change a course that I think I'm supposed to be on.
Yeah. It's noise doing. And I'm going to mess it up, but a saying that I was fortunate to hear when I was young was like, confidence isn't walking into a room and thinking that you're better than everyone else. Confidence is walking in and not comparing yourself.
It's exactly right. Yeah. And I don't worry what anyone else is in the industry is doing. You know, of course, every once in a while I'm like, oh, what's, you know, if something comes my way, I'm like, oh, interesting. But like, you know, I think that's very human. I'm not going to pretend I'm above seeing it, but like, I do make sure that for the most part, I'm not watching everyone else. And in business, they say that's like a mistake. You're supposed to see what everyone else is doing all the time. But I actually care more what the customer is doing and thinking than I care about the industry.
Yeah. And that little bit of curiosity or interest, if we go back to like our human instincts, we are just curious beings. And if someone, these competitors, yes, there's competitors, but they also have clearly somewhere some parallel values or drives, because they want to be doing what you're doing. So there are things that pique your interest.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to take little peeks of that.
Kato, one more serious question before a sign off question. And this is around this concept of high performance. Often in New Zealand, we think of high performance pretty like tightly associated with sport. It'll be like high performance sport. But as I mentioned before we started, it's so much bigger than that. So for you, and maybe Dip and your team, but also just you, Kate, as the person, how do you define high performance?
I think high performance is the idea that you do things that fight idleness. if that makes sense. So I am a runner, and so I'm an endurance runner. I love the ocean, so like I taught myself to surf, and even though I'm terrible, but like the high performance part for me is like I can fall 50 times surfing and catch one wave and still feel like it's an achievement, right? Same thing with like, you know, even when I was skateboarding, like it's the ability to fight idleness by doing something that kind of gives you a sense of accomplishment. You don't necessarily have to be so good at something. It's the doing and the hitting the tiny milestones that I think are more high performance than just showing up and winning the races.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I've not heard that description before, but as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, I got it. Is there anything I haven't asked you before the sign-off question that you think I should have or that popped up that you'd like to talk to? Well, that's an open mic moment.
Sure. Something that I say all the time is if you do go, or if you're compelled at all to check out DIP, if you go to our website, dipalready.com, so DIPALREADY.com, go to our store locator and see if there's a salon or a surf shop or a zero waste store in your community that carries DIP. And I say that because I want people to go, instead of like adding to cart really quickly, I want them to go and do the slower way to purchase and go to these stores and ask any questions you want about DIP and like really find out what people that are not the CEO have to say about it. Because I think it's really hard in this digital world to get beyond the digital pollution and, you know, fake reviews and fake hype and all this stuff. And I will let you know that every salon or surf shop or zero waste store that carries DIP, the person who owns that store has tried it and has vetted it before it showed up on their shelves, which I think is really cool. And if anyone can find a spot close to them, I hope you support that store so I can share that sale with the store owner.
I love that. Thank you. Very important. Last question, and I ask this for everyone, is if you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, and now I'm thinking I might know who, but who would it be?
Okay, so I don't know whether it's obscure or not, but Stephen Page, he used to be the lead singer of the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah.
And then he left the band, and so any song that he's been attached to, I just love the way he writes songs. And he has like his songs are always like a little bit silly, a little bit dark. And it would be Stephen Page. I would listen to him for the rest of my life every day.
Easy. And he's one that I don't know off the top of my head. So now I'm excited to go. This is a very selfish question because it helps me build my playlist out. I'm like, hey, yeah, Stephen Page.
I know I should have said Guster, but it's Stephen Page. So I love Guster. I've listened to them forever. But they're very kind of similar in you know, the time frame when they were popular and all these things. But I'll send you a couple of my favorite songs from both bands that Stephen Page has been in.
Oh, please. Kate, I think I will wrap it up and stop recording in a moment. Before I do that, I just want to on record that I feel energized from talking with you right now. Like, I want to get up and do something, right? And that's a real indicator to me of this tall poppy that also shares it, because I am sure you've been around. There are people who are certified successful, but it's a very like selfish pursuit. But even just the way you talk about your team and how you want to lift others up and the role models you've had and how you're making me feel now, it's very cool to see a leader with that genuine like authenticity. So thank you. And thank you for making the time to be on Tall Poppy Talk today.
Yeah, thank you for having me and sharing your pod and your audience with me, and for being a New Jersey girl. I like love it so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest.